Hey! Information about the dodo. Quick, tell me, where does he live? What's he like? Where'd he go? Which way?
That way!
From
me, Doc. I'm multiplying, see? I'm multiplying. Let's see, what can I do to this guy next? Oh, no! It's too gruesome! But I'll do it.
Hello and welcome to Tooncast Beyond. This is the Animation Direction Spotlight. I am your host, TFG One Mike. Joining me once again is TV's Mr. Neil.
If they just let me, I'd give them the boy.
Yes. Tonight, in the Animation Direction, in the hot seat, we have Mr. Bob Clampett.
Yes.
A man who is...
both revered and reviled.
Yeah, there is that. We'll get into that. but his style is... on some of his cartoons, his style is unlike any of the other Looney Tunes directors. Not saying they're all the same, but there's only so many times you can see Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd chasing each other. There's only so many different things you can do with a chase scene between those two. The majority of his work was with Porky, actually, though, for Bob Clampett. I love a lot of his cartoons. I really do.
Yeah, I think the main reason why he worked with Porky so much is because he was one of the earliest animators, and so because Porky was the first real breakout star, so that's kind of what he was mostly right. What he would have been working with. Because I don't think Bugs came around until like 1939, 1940, or somewhere around there.
Yeah, and Porky was the first Porky one, according to Wikipedia, take it with a grain of salt. 1937, Porky's Bad Time Story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in here. There's a lot in his shorts and stuff that I absolutely love. The man himself, as you said, both revered and reviled. I did not know he went on to do Beanie and Cecil.
Yep.
I never knew that. I used to love that cartoon growing up because my mom showed it to me, but I had no idea until I started doing research on him that he was one of the people behind Beanie and Cecil.
Well, his name is in the theme song. Like, every single episode, it's like, a Bob Clampett cartoon.
Oh, I haven't seen Beanie and Cecil in 35 years, probably. Well, I'm 34, so... in at least 25, 30 years. I haven't seen Beanie and Cecil since I was a little kid. Yeah. Let's just go ahead and get the controversy stuff out of the way first. He started with Looney Tunes. In his own words, so enchanted by the new medium of sound cartoons that he instead joined... Harmon Ising Studios in 1931 for $10 a week. Schlesinger viewed one of Clampett's 16mm films and was impressed, offering him an assistant position at the studio. And then the controversy, basically he's an egotist. He thinks that he created Bugs Bunny all by himself.
And he, objectively, he did not.
No.
I mean, we know pretty much where Bugs Bunny came from. It was a mix of Tex Avery and basically all the other guys put together except for Bob.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I love Bob's stuff with Bugs. I think I love Bugs Bunny Gets the Boyd. I love Wabbit Trouble. I love The Big Snooze. You know, I do love when he did use Bugs Bunny. I will say that I am more of a fan of the quote-unquote classic style. Like I don't want to say good versus bad, but some of those early Bugs cartoons, he hadn't quite taken his quote-unquote classically known design yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was really dark gray, the ears were a little lopsided at times, and his face kind of looked like a rat's face a little bit.
It's a lot more rubbery.
Yeah.
He's a lot more of a troublemaker too. I mean, later Bugs is just kind of like very calm and like just not taking shit from anyone. Whereas early Bugs is just, he is just like, he's basically Woody Woodpecker, and he's almost not quite indistinguishable from Daffy, but they're much closer in personality in those early years.
They are, yeah. Which is so funny, because I wonder if they created Daffy to basically make fun of Bob Clampett.
I don't know. I think that Daffy... Oh, you mean like later Daffy, where he's an asshole?
Later Daffy, where he's all about himself. Yeah. Layton. Not the early Daffy.
Yeah, because early Daffy is totally Bob Clampett. The whole hopping around on the lake and... that is totally Bob Clampett.
You know, when I'm actually going to put the links that you sent me in the post so everybody can see some of the examples of what we watched to prep for this episode. One of the ones I watched was the Corny Concerto, and it's basically I don't want to say fat, but
it's middle. Like a mini version of Fantasia, almost.
Well, it is, but you've got Elmer there, but he's not the fat Elmer, and he's not the skinny kind of Elmer that we would know later. He's kind of in the middle. He's kind of his whole, you know, shirt thing is coming up, and his pants are coming down, and whatever else, because he's introducing these clips. I'll be honest, I kind of skipped a little bit through the first one because I know what the Corny Concerto is because it has Blue Danube in it, and I love Blue Danube because it's basically, at least for me personally, it's kind of like Trumpet of the Swan. It's really kind of like Trumpet of the Swan because you've got this swan mother and her three children, and you've got the classic, you know, Vulture is the villain, and you've got Whittle Daffy. And Whittle Daffy is, he could almost give Plucky a run for his money. Like, if you put Little Daffy up against Plucky Duck, it's like they would be brothers. I mean, because the way, and I know most people in animation don't see it this way, I see Plucky as Daffy's son. I know it's not Daffy's son, it's supposed to be but the way that, you know, the Tiny Toons people put that together, you know, you kind of could allude to it, even though Buster and Babs, you know, have no relation.
Right.
It's just one of those things. You see 90s Daffy pop in, you know, these classes with spotlight stealing. Whoa, it's just my luck, you know. I swear. But Blue Danube, you've got Little Daffy, and you know he sees these swans, and he goes along in there, and they're honking along to the instrumental, and I just like, love when Daffy comes in because the Swan Mother just stops. The babies run into her, and she turns around and basically just swats him on the ass. Oh my god, I love that one. I love the Blue Danube part of the Corny Concerto. Clampett did some damn good work.
Yeah. First part of that cartoon, I believe that's like one of three times that Bugs Bunny and Porky appeared in the same cartoon together. That was an extremely rare thing to happen. But anyway,
it was because it was either Bugs and Daffy, or it was Daffy and Elmer, or Bugs and Elmer, or later Bugs and Yosemite Sam, and Porky was kind of off doing his own thing. I mean, sure, there are plenty of Porky and Daffy cartoons where they're interacting with each other, but I mean, seeing that with Bugs and Porky, it's like, hey, let's flash to 1989 and have Bugs and Mickey on the screen. You know, it really was one of those very rare occasions. You know, Clampett did stuff like Horton hatches an egg. I didn't even need to go back and watch that. I've seen that so many times. And it's, again, one of those musical episodes. And I'm generally not a fan of live-action musicals, for the most part. But if it's in a cartoon, I don't really... It doesn't really matter that much to me. What else do we want to say about Clampett?
Well, I mentioned last time that he's John Chrisfalusi's favorite animator, and I said it's really appropriate because the two of them are just alike. Basically, they both have monstrous egos, and both kind of left the industry in a huff, and nobody really noticed that they were gone. It's like, Bob Clampett wasn't the first animator to leave Schlesinger Studios. That would be Tex Avery, and Tex Avery left in an even bigger hub, but we'll get to that. But, you know, it's like, at least Tex went on and did a whole bunch of stuff, whereas Clampett, he went on to Republic Pictures and he did one cartoon. And then, as you said later, he went on to Beanie and Cecil. It's like, he moved the industry so fast when he was when he was working with Schlesinger, and then as soon as he was gone, he just faded away, and that's kind of what Chrisfalusi did. And it's just kind of weird that these two guys are so alike. And somebody, they even met each other, the story that Chrisfalusi told, it kind of confirms a lot of what we've been hearing, which is that Bob is basically a huge prankster and easily gets under people's skin for no reason whatsoever. Although absolutely. Chrisfalusi was amused by it, but still, you could tell from the story he's kind of a dick. And I suppose we could get into that. It was like we said, he took credit for the creation of Bugs Bunny, and in particular it was Chuck Jones and Friz Freleng who both disliked him the most, and even Mel Blanc kind of said, you know, this guy took way too much credit for things that he didn't really do. And it was such a... Chuck almost took it too far, because he did a special later on in life. It was called like the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie. Yep. It was a TV special, and he gave credit to every animator except for Bob Clampett. It's like, wow.
Now, a lot of the ones that I watched in preparation for this have him listed, a lot of the earlier ones have him listed as supervision. They don't have him listed as director. What's the difference?
There may not be one. It may have been just like an industry term at the time. I don't know. I didn't really look into that, but it could just be that they had a different word for that and they changed it in later cartoons. I don't know. Or sometimes it may not be the case here, but sometimes, you know, other directors would leave halfway through a production, and, you know, he'd have to go in and and finish. Like, that happened twice, in fact, when Tex Avery left and another animator left, he finished cartoons for them. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe he only had like a partial credit, or I don't know.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite Clampett tunes?
Oh my God. What was the one with the falling hair? That's the one with the gremlin.
Yeah.
Let's see. There was
the gremlin in the airplane. Yeah.
Yeah. There were like three that I didn't actually send you. It was like the one where Tweety is paired up with the two goofy cats, the two that came before Sylvester.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it was clearly an homage to God damn it, what are those names? Those two comedians from the 30s and 40s. God damn, I can't remember their name.
Oh, Elvis and Costello.
Abbott and Costello. Yeah, those are the precursors to Sylvester. And you can, in fact, going back to Chris Belusi, if you look at Stimpy, he's got like the big bulbous nose and the little pointy ears. Stimpy is basically a big ripoff of every cat that that Clampett had ever designed.
Mm.
So, yeah. Let's see. Drafty Daffy was kind of a one that I thought was really funny when I was a kid, just because he's trying to. I didn't even realize what it was, but he's like trying to escape the guy in the draft board.
There are a lot of wartime cartoons they did. I mean, most of these came out during World War II.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Bugs doing the War Bond ads and stuff like that, and I like Drafty Daffy. I thought that was a really cool cartoon. It was interesting. What's the one where? Oh crap! There's a cartoon where Daffy gets it has nothing to do with the military, but it makes a military joke. He gets rejected, and they basically, you know, give him a stamp 4F, which basically means you're screwed. There's no way you're going to get in the military.
Mm-hmm.
God, I watched it too, and I can't remember which one it is. I don't remember. You know, there's that, and what I find so hilarious in my you know, offline life, back in high school, even though I am physically disabled, I have mild cases of cerebral palsy, I was born with it because a doctor decided to hit the booze that night before delivering me, but anyway, that is a true story, I'm not lying about that. I had army recruiters and military recruiters trying to recruit me, so I would fill out all these damn tests in like junior and senior year, and basically it came back as 4F, so I'm just a reject, just like Daffy was. you look at stuff like, Porky and Wacky Land, that was amazing.
Yeah, that one, even though it's in black and white, that's kind of like the first modern Looney Tunes cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's pretty much the standard Porky at that point. Mm-hmm. And it's got the comedy timing of what we would normally associate with Looney Tunes. It's not like the other black and white Porkies.
Right, yeah.
Because the other black and white Porkies are so, oh my God, I cannot stand old Porky Pig cartoons. But like with this,
as long as you don't say a bad word about you ought to be in pictures, we'll be all right.
No, that one's perfectly fine. But
yeah,
this one was like really when the Looney Tunes style took off. So
yeah,
in a way, yeah. I got to give Clampett some credit. He basically invented the style that would be Looney Tunes.
Yeah. No, but I love Porky and Wacky Land because that's where the dodo starts, and all as I can think of, and I know I've already mentioned the show once already. Well, I mentioned one show already by Spielberg, but the only thing I can think of every time I think of Porky and Wacky Land, I think of Heskel and Egbert from Critical Condition and Animaniacs.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. But Porky and Wackyland was interesting. I know that a lot of people, and it's even on several of the Golden Collection DVDs, say that some of the jokes in the Looney Tunes cartoons were racial slurs and stuff like that. I would have to think that the most blatant one of all is in Porky and Wackyland. Dark Africa, darker Africa, darkest Africa.
Yeah. Although I've heard the term dark darkest Africa, and I don't know that there's actually a racial.
No, I mean as far as the visual, when Porky's flying over Africa and the colors consistently change. But no, Porky and Wackyland is awesome. I really do enjoy that one. But really, his Bugs Bunny tunes are really, really what make me enjoy Clampett as a director. I mean, you cannot go, you know, the entire short once, you know, once Bugs says, "I reiterate, such a serene scene," you know, in Big Snooze. And they did such detail on this that he says, "It would be such a catastrophe if something were to happen here." And he brings in the nightmare paint, and the paint can actually says nightmare paint on it. Oh, God. Yeah, Clampett, like, now that I've watched a lot of the stuff, you know, for this episode, honestly, I didn't remember a lot of this stuff because I did once I saw it, and obviously everybody knows Porky and Wackyland. Everybody knows that, but like Wabbit Twubble and the Wacky Wabbit, you know, I didn't even remember that Bugs Bunny Gets the Boyd was Clampett. I thought it was one of the other ones, one of the other guys. But like Wabbit Twubble and the Wacky Wabbit, I didn't remember those because honestly, right now in 2014, Boomerang only shows like a lot of Chuck Jones Roadrunner. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And they've been showing a lot, like right now on Cartoon Network's Boomerang, Looney Tunes runs at 2 a.m. and 12 noon, which is kind of a travesty to me. But anyway, they show like everybody. I think I've seen a Clampett cartoon on that block.
Oh, it's too bad.
I honestly do not think I've ever seen a single one. Most of it's McKimson. Not that I have anything against McKimson. I like a lot of his Foghorn Leghorn stuff. And we'll get to him down the line. But yeah, I mean, those blocks now, I guess, I don't know if Cartoon Network doesn't have the rights to them or what the deal is, but
I'm pretty sure they have the rights to show anything they want. It's just that maybe they feel McKimson is, or not McKimson, Clampett. Maybe they feel Clampett is a little racier, but I can't really think of too many offensive cartoons he's done, other than Cole Black. I mean, I think we'll just kind of skip over that one.
Yeah, let's do.
You know, the thing about Clampett is that I think more than any other director, he had like this sense of volume, and that means like the characters look like they take up space, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it was, I'm trying to think if it was the Wacky Wabbit or if it was Wabbit Trouble, which is the one that Elmer is camping.
Oh God,
I'm going to have to look. Talk about Clampett for a second.
Well, like I was saying, it was Wabbit Trouble. Okay.
Yeah, it was Wabbit Trouble. If you look at that one, the sheer brilliance of Bugs, like Bugs isn't even Bugs is being himself, and this is slightly early Bugs with Wabbit Trouble. But if you just look at it, where he's constantly and Wabbit Trouble is Fat Elmer. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it is Fat Elmer, and the jokes, like the clothes gag, like, you know, pulling his, you know, pantsing him and stuff like. They don't really like those kind of comedy gags on that on Fat Elmer don't really appeal to me that much. But if you look at what Bugs does to him in that, he basically makes him think that an entire day and night has passed. And I can just see him saying, he doesn't say this in the cartoon, but I can see him saying this, what am I going to do to this guy next? What's that? You know, I can just see him doing like a screwball squirrel. Oh, God.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's more of a Tex Avery gag, but...
Yeah. Oh, God, I cannot wait until next week when we talk about Tex, because Tex, as much as I love Clampett stuff, I love Screwball Squirrel. He's amazing.
Oh my god, I almost started going into like a story about that, but you know, I can't do that right now.
No, not yet. Wait till next week. But I love that cartoon in Wabbit Trouble because, I mean, Elmer doesn't even know he's there until a little bit later after he pulls that gag. With the glasses, and he paints over his glasses, makes him think it's nighttime, and you know, Bugs does this really, really bad impression of Foghorn Leghorn. Cock-a-doodle-doo! You know, it's like, oh my god. And he's holding the towel with a branch. It's just such a good cartoon.
Yeah, you know what, I'm looking at the credits here. One thing about Leon Schlesinger is he always made the directors, you know, credit themselves under their like full name. So it was never Chuck Jones. It was always like Charles M. Jones.
Yeah,
but looking at this, he let Bob Clampett credit himself as Wobbert Clampett, and I think that might have been like something else that might have been a sticking point with the other animators is that Clampett was kind of like the special boy. So he seemed to get away with a lot more.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Chuck Jones pointed that out, at least that's what it says here on Wiki, but if you look at that on Wabbit Twubble, it's not just him. If you look at that credit scene, I noticed that when I watched it, they're all, like, spelled and pronounced as if, you know, Elmer was gonna say their names.
Yeah.
So it's not just...
I know, but it's like... this would only like happen with a Bob Clampett cartoon. It's like anyone else, they would never allow that to happen.
Yeah, I guess it was just a gag
for
that one, because that's the only one that I noticed it ever happening. And even the other Clampett cartoons I watched, it was just regular writing.
Mm-hmm.
Bugs Bunny gets the Boyd. I love that. This is so hilarious. That's a cartoon that I can watch over and over again and never not laugh at it, because it is so hilariously good. The things he does to that poor vulture, that poor buzzard. And he actually, you know, I mean, the buzzard does catch on, but the whole time that, you know, he's like, Bugs goes down in the hole, the whole time the buzzard is up and, you know, waiting, you hear Bugs singing, a buzzard is too fast, you know, it's just... Oh, God. But Bob Clampett has an amazing body of work. He did accomplish a lot of really cool things for being one of the first early directors of Looney Tunes. It's just amazing what he accomplished. I mean, the guy even has his own award, named after him. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many other ones have that, but that, you know, is kind of a rare thing. But according to this, since 1984, the Bob Clampett Humanitarian Award is given out each year at the Eisner Awards. Clampett's Tin Pan Alley Cats was chosen by the Library of Congress as a prime example of the music and mores of our times, and a print was buried in a time capsule in Washington, D.C., so future generations might see it. Porky and Wacky Land was also inducted into the National Film Registry of the Library of Congress in 2000, deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. That's amazing that we can put, you know, cartoons in a Hall of Fame or, you know, National Film Registry.
Right.
That really, really is amazing. Was there anything you didn't like? Was there any Bob Clampett stuff that you didn't really care for?
I can't really think of any. Maybe Jeepers Creepers, because that was kind of one of those early musical cartoons. Or even though it was after Porky and Wacky Land, it was still kind of I don't know, the timing was kind of weird, and you know, stuff that really wasn't funny would go on way too long, and there was the joke at the end where the ghost is standing there and Porky jumps in the car and drives away, and there's a blackface joke, you know. Again, product of the time.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, there's not really that much that I don't like about Clampett's stuff. Like I said, I prefer his bug stuff to his Porky stuff, but I mean, I still love Porky and Wacky Land. I will always love that cartoon. I really wish that they would have at some point had the dodo from Porky and Wacky Land meet Gogo the dodo. Oh,
geez.
Oh, come on. You gotta love Gogo. Come on now.
I don't know. It's, you know what? That character has, I'm trying to think. Frank Welker.
It's Welker.
He has Frank Welker's kind of gummy voice. You know, the one that it's kind of like Scooter or one of those annoying voices that he does, like Orbity from the Jetsons. And I can't stand that voice.
I still love the joke from the very first episode, though, in Looney Beginning, when they kick him to Wacky Land. Home, surreal home. I still love that joke. All right. I think we're going to take a quick break, come back with kind of final thoughts on Clampett, and close out the show after this.
Say, Jarvis, is it that time?
The house party protocol, sir?
Correct.
The Pull Bag is GCRN's comic book review and discussion-based podcast. Join me, your host, TF2 and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we make our way through the comics we are reading. Inside the Pull Bag, you'll also find back-issue classics and origins episodes of how we got into comic reading. You can find the Pull Bag every Wednesday on iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Make your great escape into comics and jump into the Pull Bag today.
Jarvis.
Hey.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Grab your helmets, because it's time to assemble Mask. Mask Mayhem is here with your hosts, TF2 and Mike, Optimus Solo, and brand new host, Toon Master Tim. This podcast, covering all 75 episodes of Mask, will feature in-depth analysis of every episode, talking the toys, and more. Mask Mayhem will run 30 podcast episodes. You can find us on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com. So get your spectrums ready, as podcasting is the ultimate weapon.
What's the matter, Doc? You cold? Here, I'll fix that.
All right, we are back. Final thoughts on Mr. Clampett, sir?
Really talented guy. Kind of wasted in his later years just because he left the industry and never really did anything except for Beanie and Cecil. Yeah, it's kind of a shame because, you know, of the five major directors, he's like the one who evolved the most, I think. And unlike Avery, he never really did anything after he left. So yeah. it's kind of like a bittersweet thing, and it's too bad that he had to be such an ass, because he was like clearly one of the most talented in the entire studio.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love the ones I love as far as the ones that he's done. Yeah, you're right. It is kind of a shame that he never, like everybody else, you know, you always saw, you know, later in life and whatever else, you know, the others have. I mean, Chuck Jones was doing stuff till God knows when, you know, I mean, but Bob Clampett, your cartoons are remembered well, most of them anyway. And next week, the wackiness will continue here on Tooncast Beyond's Animation Direction, because we are going to go to the House of the Future with Tex Avery. Wait, did he do House of... I know he did House and Car of Tomorrow, but who did House of the Future? That's the one with the two mice, and they go into the house. I don't remember. We'll have to figure it out. We'll see if we can find that next week. So, where can people catch up with you online and stuff, sir? Hello?
I have a superhero webcomic called Decian, and that would be at decian.com. Also, nosuperpants.com, although that URL will probably go away at some point. But in case you can't spell it, there you go. Also, it's on Facebook, facebook.com/decian comic. Mm-hmm. Also, animationaficionados.com. I can't talk tonight for some reason.
It's welly twobbling.
Yeah, I'm having Elmer issues here. That's basically it. Twitter is Neil Sama.
Awesome.
Yes.
You can find me, TFG and Mike, on Twitter and Facebook. You can go to geekcastradio.com, find all our other social network stuff there. And like I said, we'll be back next week for Tex Avery. So that's going to be interesting. We will catch you later.
Someone's rocking my dream boat. Someone's invading my dreams. We were sailing along, peaceful and calm. I reiterate, what a heavenly dream. You know, it would be a catastrophe if perchance harm were to befall this serene scene.